We are in Genesis, the 45th chapter.
Then Yosef could not control himself before all those who stood by him. He cried, "Make everyone go out from me." So no one stayed with him, and Yosef made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud so that the Egyptians heard it, and that household of Pharaoh heard it. And Yosef said to his brothers, "I am Yosef. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. So Yosef said to his brothers, "Come near to me, please." And they came near, and he said to him, "I am your brother, Yosef, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine had been in the land these 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Yosef, God has made me a lord of all Egypt. Come down to me, do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children, and your children's children, and your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. There I will provide for you, for there are yet 5 years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have do not come to poverty. And now your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see, that it is my mouth that speaks to you. You must tell my father that all my honor in Egypt and of all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here." Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept. And Benjamin wept upon his neck. And he kissed all his brothers and wept upon them. After that, his brothers talked with him. When the report was heard in Pharaoh's house, "Yosef's brothers have come," it pleased Pharaoh and his servants. And Pharaoh said to Yosef, "Say to your brothers, do this, load your beasts and go back to the land of Canaan, and take your father and your households and come to me, and I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you shall eat the fat of the land. And you, Yosef, are commanded to say, do this, take wagons from the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. Have no concern for your goods, for the best of all the land is yours." Then the sons of Israel did so, and Yosef gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh, and gave them provisions for the journey. To each and all of them he gave a change of clothes, but to Benjamin he gave 300 shekels of silver and 5 changes of clothes. To this his father sent as follows, 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and provision for his father on the journey. Then he sent his brothers away, and as they departed, he said to them, "Do not quarrel on the way." So they went up out of Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to their father Jacob. And they told him, "Yosef is still alive, and he is ruler over all the land of Egypt." And his heart became numb, for he did not believe them. But when they told him all the words of Yosef, which he had said to them, and when he saw the wagons that Yosef had sent to carry him, the spirit of his father Jacob revived. And Israel said, "It is enough. Yosef, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die."
Yes.
8. It says, "So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God, and he has made me a father to Pharaoh."
We'll talk about that, yes.
Yeah. Was Pharaoh younger than Joseph?
No.
Okay.
Pharaoh was older. Much older. Yes, now the five again, yes. 5 means something very special.
I think it's interesting how sometimes he's referred to as Jacob and sometimes Israel. Anyways, 27, 28, it says, and then Jacob, their father, revived, and then 28 goes into, then Israel said. I'm wondering if you can explain that.
I still have trouble with spirit and soul. Spirit and soul, I still have trouble distinguishing what's what here. And it says, verse 27, he said, his spirit revived. Why wouldn't it be
soul? One's called actually nephesh.
Huh?
It's nephesh, spirit and nephesh. Okay, nephesh, not nephesh. Yes.
I find it interesting that he referred when he sent them away and said, see that you not fall out or quarrel on the way.
Yeah. I'll explain that too. It's very important because what he said in the very first part of this chapter. No more questions. Oh, you have another one, but don't know what is it?
Verse 23 says he sent to his father 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, food for the journey.
Yep.
But then I don't know how long the journey was, so I'm trying to
figure
out.
It'll take a while.
Okay, because that's a lot for them to, he's going to send out all the good things of Egypt to him. And he's going to have to bring
it back.
Well,
they didn't have airplanes in those days, you know, flying in, flying out, you know. Yes, he had to provide for. Look at the next chapter, tells you how many people were there. 70 people need a lot of food on the journey going back and forth. Next chapter. Basically, it is the food. He gave them to his brothers, yeah. But the clothing also probably gave so that the kids would have them. The kids would have them. Okay, anything else about the story?
He says, I've been set ahead here to preserve life.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too. Because that's the message. That's the whole point of the entire chapter. We'll talk about that, basically, what it means in Hebrew. Last week, I went over chapter 45, verses 1, verses 2, and verse 3. And then I said I'll talk more about that this week. Now, with Joseph, verse 3, I am Joseph, does my father live? And the statement says his brothers could not answer him. Why? It says they were troubled at his presence. They were troubled at his presence. What does that mean? Well, now remember, this is the second most powerful man in all the world to them. He wasn't just a guy. He's the one that says he's the life or death. Remember, he told them many times before, I am the one that makes your choice, whether you live or you die. Whether you go home or you stay in prison. I'm the one that says you're a spy, no one else will challenge me. Remember that? He's hostile. Remember that? Now, yes, Ellie.
Well, I think they also became real hesitant about answering any questions because last time their dad got after him. Why did you tell him you had a brother? Why did you tell him this, that, and the other? So they probably just stood there and looked at him.
Okay, the Hebrew word here for trouble. Bahal. Bahal. It basically means to be terrified inwardly, frightened within themselves, to such a point that it was not only a surprise, it was such alarming surprise. Now, what was the alarming surprise? What was presented before them? What was presented before them? Yes.
He looked like an Egyptian. I mean, he had the whole figuration and the hair style and maybe the, you know, the eye makeup on. Who knows whatever it was.
They were frightened of his presence. What does his presence mean? Yes.
I'm thinking tit for tat. You kill my dog, I'll kill your cat. They were terrified that because they sold
no,
him into Egypt.
No, that's not what that says here. I'm trying to break it, but we got to know what this means. In his presence. What on earth does that mean? Now the word has very important to know the meaning of the word. To understand why they were terrified inwardly. Scared and alarmed inwardly. Their actions became an outward appearance. And he tells them to do something. But let's go into this one. The word presence comes from the word, quote, basically, it means, the root word means to turn away from, also can mean turning toward, his face. Now, it's very fascinating to know this because this man's face was frightening to them. His appearance was frightening, and when you came into the father into the chapter, you'll find out that they were so afraid of his face, his presence, his power, like I said before, but they did something. They were so afraid. What did they do? They backed away. They didn't quite get the message that he was yet who he was. Now he spoke in their language. He told them who they were. He says, is my father alive? Now that's not what they heard. They were afraid of his presence, being in his presence, because this man has authority. Verse 4, listen very carefully. Because of their inward fear, they're afraid of this presence, this man, he said something to them. Come near to me. And guess what they did? They came near. And he had to repeat himself, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold unto Egypt. Now they know who he is. When you first hear the statement, ah, I am Joseph. Is my brother, my father still alive? They're going to look out of fear and fright. And they're going to do something with inside themselves. Out of fear, they backed away. And then he says, come nearer to me. And he did. And he says, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Therefore, verse 5, very fascinating word now. Be not grieved, this is Old English, nor angry with yourself. Now, what does grieve mean? Atzav.
Regret.
Pain. Basically, in Hebrew, means pain. Displeased. Waxing weak. Becoming unable. You're so frightened. It really means an emotional reaction that has a physical or emotional reaction that has to do with sorrow or grief or what? Yeshua. Genesis, you don't turn to Genesis 6, don't have to turn there. Remember he come here and he's talked to Noah and he said, and it repented Yahuwah that he had made man on the earth and it grieved him. It gave pain, it gave sorrow, it gave sadness. Now, at this point, he also throws in angry. Now, we think of the word angry, what do you think of? Now, he says, don't be sorrowful. Don't be painful towards yourself. Oh, How are you going to take it then? How do you not take this? You sold him. What now? How do you recover from this thing? He is going to do something for us selling him. In a sense, he's going to get even. That's what they would be thinking, don't you think? Would you not be thinking the very same thing? He's going to get even. And he turned around and says, don't be sorrowful. Don't be painful. Don't be troubled. Don't be in pain in yourself. Now, if you're thinking, okay, how do I get out of this? Right? And he says something very simple. Now, the word angry is not a good word here, although you could use it as a word. That's a different meaning of a word. It means basically to get burnt, or to burn, or to kindle, or to wax hot. Do not kindle against yourself. Do not burn yourself. Do not be hot against yourself. You know the word of the Lord, God says that, by the way, this word is used more than any place else, more than you think, with the word anger. It means the Lord kindled his anger. Well, you can't use anger in anger. He's burned up. When the Lord says, I have a fire of gold before me, means to kindle, because burn, it means to burn things up, to burn wood, to burn buildings, to burn anything. That's what that word means. And here, what do you do when you, you or I, basic in English, we can get all hot under the collar against somebody, right? Well, in Hebrew, you're burning up inside against somebody. And you're angry. You can use that word. I'm not saying the word anger is not a bad word. Just to understand, it's not the word in Hebrew for anger. It's the word for in Hebrew mean to burn up or to kindle, to start a fire. And he says, do not burn yourself. Now, that's interesting. Do not hurt yourself. Do not pain yourself. And do not burn yourself.
In my margin, Richard, it says, neither let there be anger in your eyes.
Yes, but that's not what it says in Hebrew. Toward yourself, not toward, wait a minute, I am responsible. And you can become angry toward one another, your own brothers, yes.
People who have anger towards themselves, they say, is depression. You know, when you're so angry, you put it inward and take it out on yourself. Is that type of anger that he's talking about?
Yes, anger. It's like you're burning yourself up.
Right.
You're taking the guilt. You're taking the fault. You're taking the blame. You're taking the responsibility. And you are feeling totally 100% responsible for the actions that took place. And he says, don't do that. Why? What's the last part of this chapter? Verse say?
Don't you think Joseph knew that it was the will of God that he be where he was? That's what it says? Okay, well.
Do not be grieved or angry with yourself that you sold me here, for Elohim did send me before you to get even, to punish you, to chastise you, put you in prison, to beat you to the whip. To what? To preserve. When did the Elohim decide to send Joseph into Egypt? How old was Joseph to preserve his brothers and his family? How old was he? 2, 8, 48, 62? 17 years old. Now, is this a plan of, God has to prepare for the future because great drought's going to come and I've got to protect them? When God himself brought on the drought? Why would he do that for? Why would God bring forth a drought for 7 years? Because he wanted to punish somebody? Is that the object? Is that the object God really wanted to do when he sent Joseph into prison and saved slavery? He wanted to punish the house of Jacob? Yes.
Could this be a picture of when Messiah said to hunger and thirst after righteousness?
Okay. This is not exactly the same message. I understand what you're saying, but not quite. Where is God not involved in Joseph's life? Everything that ever happened to Joseph, including being sold as a slave, including being put in prison, including becoming the second most powerful man on the face of the earth at that time, God put him there to do something, to preserve life. What life? What life? What is preservation of life about? I'll just stop and think for just a moment. What do you see here? What do you see here?
I see Christ.
You see what?
Christ.
How?
He preserves our lives.
How?
By
going before us.
He's bringing us into family.
Now, we're looking at the physical things here, right? We have Joseph doing physical things. Planned by God to give them physical health, physical home, physical place, so they can live happily thereafter, right? Wonderful until they're dead, right? Wonderful. And there's a huge gap in Genesis and Exodus. Huge, huge years of gaps. And we don't know what would happen. Now, did God deliberately do this to Joseph? Did God deliberately do and give Jacob, his father, the grieving for all those years? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Continue.
Because a lot of these things, since he told us the end from the beginning,
okay,
he's got Joseph walking through, as Sean said, the messianic situation. You've got the bloody garments that implied his death. He's in the pit, which the Bible calls death, the pit. He's, for all practical purposes, as dead as he can be without being dead. And then he's resurrected in Egypt, and all at once he's there, and they thought he was dead, and he wasn't. So you've got the resurrection from the dead, and
you got
came
three,
and he saved
you got
his
three
family.
Phases there of the picture of the Messiah. Simple as that. So God told us in the beginning how it's going to end. Is God really, really, really responsible for what happened to Jacob? Or was it his brothers had something to do with it? Maybe sin and transgression and iniquity and hatred and bitterness and resentment, maybe that added up to it. Or did God do that? Yes or no?
God did it, but also when Joseph told his father about his dream, he should have, you know, he knew he'd made him a coat, and that was a promise through that line. So his father should have known when he seen the bloody coat. He only assumed that the father assumed that he was dead.
Right.
Therefore, he then.
So that tells you something about why it says Jacob, and then it says Israel. Right? One name represents one thing, the other name represents what?
The nation.
The nation will someday see the Messiah. That is all of Israel. What did Jacob, what did Moses, Apostle Paul. He says, when the number of the Goyims are in and counted, oh, let's put it this way. The number of Egyptians brought in and accounted, put in the big, same phrase. The Egyptians, were they not blessed or were they cursed by Joseph? They're blessed by Joseph, but under a different name. A name that was hidden, that they did not know his real name. But they were blessed because they trusted Joseph. They trusted they're a second man, most powerful. Yes.
It seems like it is always about the greatest good. It always is about the greatest good. in every circumstance, in every human's life, the tragedies, the trials, somehow, if we have faith through it, then the greatest good can come from it. And just like what he did, was part of a story that we, the nations, can look at now and see that.
We have to see the Messiah in this picture. But more so, we have to see the hand of the Father. Because it is His will that's being done. Nobody else's. Now, let's go on with this statement. Preservation of life in Hebrew actually comes from the word to live. Chaya. Chaya means to live. Chay means life. Chaya means to live. And so he says, to preserve life. Sent me to preserve, to quicken life. Sent me to recover life. Sent me to retrieve life. Sent me to sustain life. Wow, does that sound like Joseph? Does that sound like the Messiah? They're both. One physical, pictured the spiritual. So when the Messiah was put into the death camp, and he was killed, as Joseph was pictured being killed, but then resurrected up from the dead in a sense, brought out of the bottomless pit. Then what happened? He went into the grave. Joseph went into the dungeon. You know what a dungeon is? It's not like the city hall jail. It's down into the earth. Where the earth protected Joseph. Preserved Joseph in a sense. Now it says a very interesting thing there in Greek. It says the earth, I can't remember exactly what it says in Hebrew Greek, but it's like the earth preserved him, kept him. Earth is a grave. This time, the word was changed. It's just going to preserve him for a while. And 3 days later, of course, he was resurrected from the dead. But now we're at this point in time that we understand that he says, okay, to live, to have life, to retain life, to sustain life, and even to have prosperity of life, and to literally live forever. That Hebrew word means to life, means to live forever. Now, it's been 2 years in the famine, and he says, verse 7, Elohim sent me before you to preserve you in prosperity in the earth. It's something the Messiah said. Seek you the kingdom of God first, and these things will be added unto you. What was going to be added unto him? Prosperity. Wealth. Abundance. Who will inherit the earth? The meek. What are they going to do with the earth? They're going to use it for their benefit. Yes?
Posterity or prosperity?
Prosperity. And verse 7, he said, now a latter part of it, he says, and something different. To save your life by a gadol deliverance. Did you catch that? Gadol. A great delivery. Now, did Joseph at that time really save them from a great delivery? In the flesh, yes. Who's going to save you from the great delivery? The gadol. Who's the great deliverer? He answers to whom? Now, as we keep on going down here, we're going to find out something very fascinating, because Pharaoh had to make a statement. When Pharaoh made a statement, then it happened. Not when Joseph made the statement, when Pharaoh made the statement. We'll get to the thing about father too. Just a minute. I don't know if I got time. This is going to go. I'm not going to finish this chapter at all. Not at all. Verse 8. He says, so you did not send me. He's talking to his brothers. You did not send me here. And in Hebrew, it says, the Elohim, Ha Elohim, he has made me father to Pharaoh. Now, that's a really odd statement. Because we say, man, how could he be a father of Pharaoh when Pharaoh really is the boss? What does father mean? A what? A guide. Provider. Sustainer. Protector. All right. Who is your, quote, earthly spiritual father? Who is your, quote, earthly spiritual father? Who is your earthly spiritual father? Abraham. We are the sons of Abraham, and he is our father. I read that last time when we were at the new moon reading, right? He says, remember your father, Abraham, and your mother, Sarah. Don't forget them, because they are your father and your mother. Now we say, well, no, I'm not really of Abraham. I'm not related to him in any way, shape, or form. I'm something else. But I'm not connected to Abraham at all. Now why would you be connected to Abraham? Why did Apostle Paul say you're connected to Abraham? How are you connected to Abraham? Because he believed God, trusted God. When you believe God and trust God, you become the child of Abraham. You're related to him. Not by flesh, but by spirit. We use this word in our English language, if I can use it correctly. We could talk to a total stranger, and after a while, we have this word, we say, we have kinship between us. No, you never knew each other before. There's not a bone in your body that looks like that person. But there's kinship. You're related to them. Because of what? Yes, and the thing you have in common with Abraham is trust in God. Now, here it is, Pharaoh. Now we have this thing that he is saying, a father. He, Elohim, has made me a father to Pharaoh. Now what, how could he could be a father to Pharaoh? Now, in Hebrew, yes.
Well, because Joseph was Pharaoh's most trusted and valuable advisor.
Yeah.
And so anything that Joseph said to Pharaoh, he took very seriously.
Now, we have our own English phrases, right? Who's considered the father of our country? Oh, really? Did he have a relationship with some woman and outcome the United States of America? No. Why is he called that for? What did he do? What did he do to be called that? It's not.
He led the country. He established values.
Ah. He had integrity, value, and courage. His total faith and confidence in God was powerful. He trusted God. And therefore he became head of our country. Or he became, quote, the father of our country. Or the founder of our kind of government we have. He became the one that established it and brought about and instituted it. Because everybody had given him great honor. Now, in the case here, Pharaoh was giving Joseph great honor. How much honor did Pharaoh give Joseph?
Second in command.
Second command. Now, that means he is giving him honor, respect, and admiration. Admiring him. And so Pharaoh, yes, gave that true God. Pharaoh gave unto Joseph fatherhood, respect, honor. You understand what I'm saying? It's not that hard to figure out when you really start thinking about breaking down that rule. It also could mean ruler or chief. Okay? Let's go on here. Verse 10. And thou shalt dwell in the land of Goshen, and thou shalt be here, thou shalt bear unto thee, and thy children, and children's children, and thy flock, and the herd, you know, bring them all down. Now, what does Goshen mean? We have places in the United States we call Goshen. Well, we have places called Shiloh, too. We have places called Bethlehem, too, you know. Our country just names things after the Bible quite a bit of times. Doesn't mean the same thing. Now, they have found absolutely no meaning to the word. The Septuagint comes close, they think. And so I'm going to have to say, I'll take what the Septuagint has to say in relationship to the meaning of this word. They take it from another phrase or another terminology, which could make a little bit of sense to me. So I'm just going to tell you what the Septuagint has to say. The Hebrew has no meaning, but the Septuagint has a meaning. They believe it means that land which is cultivated, that land which you can grow food, you grow a crop on. It's like in the lowlands or the land where the river is by, and you have constantly drawing water from the river in order to navigate, in order to grow crops. All right? That's what he said he wanted to do. And he said, verse 11, that's what the word Goshen means, as best that I can, this is my research on it. It's not a deep meaning on it. Also, is an Arabic word for it, which means laborer, one who labors. So you have to do the land and labor it and make it work. It also means a drawing. You have to draw from the Nile River in order to put irrigation in. Irrigation, by the way, is nothing new. It's been around long before Abraham was around. Long before Abraham was around. And verse 11 says, I will now, in Old English, it says nourish you. Actually, in Hebrew, it means to sustain you. I will preserve you. I will keep you. And I'll measure it out to you the amount you need. Basically, in Hebrew. Yes?
All right, so Joseph had the power to let his family live in this very cultivation-type place.
Where did Joseph's wife live? Goshen. Joseph's wife lived in Goshen. Pharaoh gave unto Joseph a priest who lived in the place of On, which is in Goshen, where the wife was. Wife has a very important name. It means that which is given. Or I think something like that. I'm not quite sure what it is. But anyway, drop down to verse 13. I'm going to try to wrap this up. So I want you to tell something to my father. I'm reading this in Old English. All my glory in Egypt. Tell my father what I have been doing in this land of Egypt. Tell him of my responsibility. Tell him of my authority. Tell him what I do. Tell him how I have preserved the people of Egypt. Tell him of my glory and all that you have seen. So there was some time they had to be there, twice went down there, but you're going through the land and you're finding all the prosperity of the land of Egypt. Egypt was the most prosperous land at that point in time in history because God blessed that land more than any other land, including the land of Canaan. And of course, we talked about it and his brother, so on and so forth, and they talked with him and they had a long talk with one another. And now verse 16, the fame or the name, his report or the word, what this called out, was heard in Pharaoh's house. Now, what was Pharaoh's response? He was pleased. Very well pleased. Now, Pharaoh comes and says something to Joseph. What does he say? Bring your brothers down. Do this. Load up the beast. Go to the land of Canaan. Take your father and household and come unto me, Pharaoh, and I will do or Joseph good of the land. I'll give you, Joseph, the good of the land. Best part of all of Egypt. Now this is the hand of Pharaoh. Or is that the hand of God? Yeah, because it is God who put Pharaoh in position. Yes.
I'm not sure this word, would that be like providence? Or he has a hand in getting Pharaoh to say that?
I don't know. That's a good word, I guess you could say. Providence is an old English word. And in during the time of George Washington, when they ever used the word providence, they always referred to meaning God. He's involved with the action that took place. Everything that took place was God was in action. So I guess in a sense, that would be a acceptable word. That's an old word. I'm quite surprised anybody knew what that word meant or what it referred to, where it came from. And he said he's going to give them something. Take your father's household and bring them all to the land, good land of Egypt, and you shall eat. Now, you remember, now you command and do this. And they did it. They did all that stuff. And what did they do? They went up and got their father. And he didn't believe it, right? Now, there's the word changes. That was the question asked here. Why is he called Jacob over here? And then it turns around. The last sentence says Israel. Now, no, it's a play on words. I understand it's a play on words. Yes. Okay, 21. All right. I got that. I understand that one. The children of Israel said. So we're talking a spiritual, remember Israel's a spiritual name, right? What does Israel mean? One who reigns as God. That's what the name Israel means. If you don't believe me, look up when the very first time the name ever showed up. And the angel tells him exactly what it means. Yes.
It says in verse 27, Jacob their father. In verse 21, it says sons of Israel. But it sounds like that when that family was restored as a whole family again, then he is the father. They are the sons of Israel because they are a unit and Joseph has
and
been
what
brought
the,
back
if the sons
in.
Of Israel are the sons of Israel, what are the sons of Israel supposed to become? Ones that rule with God. Is that hard to understand? That's what it means. Now, when the kingdom of God comes, quote, And those who rule with the Messiah, rule with Messiah as what? A pawn? A jackass? As a Elohim. Powerful, mighty. And what do we see here in the book of Genesis? Mercy, kindness, and truth, or justice. That's what it's all about, people. We're coming to the end of the book of Genesis, which was told by prophets, I have told you in the beginning on our sheet where it starts and where it ends. Is that not right? So we're seeing here a bigger picture. A lot bigger picture. In a sense, you're going to see, quote, the kingdom of God. And he said, who gets to enter into the kingdom of God? Those who believe and trust me. You know, the sons of Jacob had a lot of fear. He told them, don't blame yourself for any transgression and any iniquity and any evil you thought or any vile words you ever said to me. Don't blame yourself. And don't accuse one another. Don't become mad at one another. Don't burn with envy inside. Don't judge yourself. Don't condemn yourself. Don't do it. Is that not what he said? Why? Because it wasn't them that's running anything. Who's running the show? Ha Elohim. The Elohim. Yes.
Should we all feel that way?
God is no different in the beginning. What is it? Same in the beginning, same in the... Same yesterday, today, and forever. Yeah, if he did it this way yesterday... He did it, do it that way. He should be doing it now. He'll be doing also the same thing in the future. Do you see the glory of God here? The mercy of God here? What did Joshua say about the, quote, Torah? You weigh against the wrong thing. The weightier matters of the Torah you ignore. Justice. Mercy. Truth. Or trust. That's the main thing in the book of Genesis. We've gotten this far. We should have confidence in itself. Apostle Paul says, it's there for not their understanding, but also for ours. For our understanding. Yes, I do talk about, and the Bible talks about how angry God gets, how furious he gets. The kindling of God's wrath is very hard, very harsh, very mean. And cruel, as we see it on the fleshly blood and life. Because how God would look back on how God treated Joseph was unkind, unmerciful, no compassion. He just did bad things to Joseph. Really? How many bad things did he do to his own son? Do people, listen, today in our society, in this building, do we quarrel amongst ourselves on how our conduct is?
No.
How we believe in God. You don't believe God like I believe God. You don't trust God like I trust God. Wait, you did this wrong. I did it wrong. Do we not blame one another? That's human beings. And God said through Joseph, don't do it. Does that make sense to you? This is not a matter of which sacrifice you should give to God. It's not about the donkey, it's not about the bear, it's not about the turtle, it's not about the doves, it's not about the lion, it's about you and me. How we need to be. Now we do fall short. And we keep on going to this, finish this chapter. You'll see that they also fall short as human beings. Should tell us that God will look and overlook our shortcomings more greater than we dare to overlook our own, let alone somebody else's. Is that not right? There's a lesson being here, being taught. So we have to understand when God says through Joseph, don't do it. The Messiah is saying to you, don't do it. That's not, using Joseph's phrase, Pharaoh's will. Using Yeshua's phrase, God's will.